What's up, everyone? Welcome back to episode 16 of the Jungle Podcast. I'm Carter.
I'm losing my shit over these Trump tweets. I'm Steven.
So I think we got to mention this quickly before we get into sort of our main topic. But obviously, the election happened on Tuesday the 3rd. Unfortunately, our podcast comes out on Wednesday. So our, like, predictions came out the day after.
Oh, did they?
Yeah.
That's funny.
So thank God I was wrong. Because I said, I said like, oh, Trump's probably going to win because, like, the pre-ballots aren't necessarily a good indicator.
My prediction was not bad because I said I honestly had no idea. And it was an alarmingly close vote. Yeah. So my prediction actually wasn't that bad up until, like, the final hour. It was like, it really was anyone's game.
Yeah. No, I had, like, no idea. I just realistically thought, people don't like change. They'll probably just keep him in.
I mean, you were very close. You were dangerously
true,
close.
Although he did lose both the electoral and popular vote, so.
He did, but when you look at the number of votes, like, man. And those, like, final, like, determining states, like, when did they announce? Saturday or Friday that Biden had won? Like, it took several days.
Thought it was Friday.
Okay. But in either case, it took a good few days before they finally knew enough of those remaining states to announce it. It was a very
So obviously everybody knows he had the recount. I think the funniest thing was so he was leading in Georgia before the recount. And then he was like, I demand a recount. And then Biden started leading.
Oh,
and
that
then
was
eventually
after
won
the
Georgia.
Recount?
Yeah. Idiot.
Oh, no.
But yeah, the tweet that started it all, I won this election by a lot. All caps. Unbelievable. Yeah, and then he just went on a rampage in all caps talking about observers weren't allowed in the counting rooms, 71,000 or 71 million legal votes, the most ever for a sitting president. Sick, but you still lost.
And people are just eating it up. And I was saying this to you just before we start recording. It's amazing that on Tuesday, he was saying, we've won this election. I'm going to the Supreme Court. We're stopping this vote. But then when Biden was announced, Trump changes his tune entirely and says, every vote hasn't been counted yet. The Democrats aren't respecting these policies. Every vote matters. It's like, if every vote matters, why the fuck did you try to stop the vote counting? Well, you were losing at that.
Yeah.
Like, it's just amazing. And it's amazing how people are just eating it up. And they're like I see people posting, like, the Democrats cheated. We haven't counted every vote yet. It's like, where was this attitude 3 days ago when Trump was saying, don't count every vote? It's just, it's amazing.
Yeah, what an idiot, a colossal idiot. And the best part is that every single one of his tweets has a strike on it saying this claim about election fraud is disputed.
Yeah, I was talking to someone the other day who was saying, like, the same people that are always so vocal about, like, if the government ever tried to infringe on my rights, I would walk in there with an AR-15 and I would show them. They're the same people that when Trump is trying to step on their rights in their favor by saying, like, oh no, stop the counting, we've already won, these same people are all in support of it. It's like, he's doing the same thing that you said you would get mad at the government for doing. Like, he's trying to infringe on your rights and your democracy, and you have no problem with it because it's Trump, and it's, God, the fucking irony.
Yeah, unfortunately, that's why hypocrisy. I hate a lot of politics, is because it just becomes a fucking shitting match of, like, this is my side, that's your side, and they just fucking throw.
Oh, and don't get me wrong, it goes all the way to the top. Like, it's the politicians themselves that are feeding that. Like,
well, I mean, look at both the debates.
Yeah. Like, it's just, man, I don't, at the end of the day, like, yeah, of course people are going to have disagreements over how the government is run, but at the end of the day, like, it's one country, you know, you're all, like, one group of people, and there are a lot of Americans saying this, and this seems to be the message that Biden is saying from what I've gathered. It's just like, you know what, at the end of the day, everyone's American, regardless if they're Democrat or Republican, they're American, and regardless of who wins, they're just, as long as you're focusing on making the country the best it can be, that's what you gotta work together on. And it's like, I don't get why.
I don't understand why, like, almost no nation does that. Or at least the North American nations really struggle with that.
Yeah.
But anyways, we'll move on to our topic and then about the election. Well, I mean, today was a cold, stark reminder that winter's here and that if you go outside, you're gonna die.
Winter was here, winter left, and then it was like, oh shit, wait, I forgot about Calgary. Fuck
yeah,
you.
I mean, that's the Calgary special. We get Chinooks.
Yeah.
That scare the shit out of Leon.
That was a long Chinook, though. Like, that was a good, like, couple weeks.
Well, it was like a week and a half, yeah. It was only, like, really warm for probably a week.
Sure, but it wasn't too bad. Like, it was, like, low positives for a while. Yeah, like, Halloween was, like, positive, wasn't it? Like, low positives?
So. I'm pretty sure Halloween was, like, 12 degrees or
was
something.
It?
Yeah.
Okay. What day is it today? Oh, it's only the 8th. Yeah, okay.
But, yeah, no, I'm... Thankfully, I don't ever have to go outside because school is all online now. Let's go.
And none of us should be going outside because COVID is, what the fuck?
Yeah, which is a second wave, which, that reminds me, next podcast, and at least going forward for the foreseeable future, is going to be remote. Like, we're going to be recording remote, so bear with us. We're going to try to figure it out, but we will continue
to... It'll go perfect.
Yeah,
no
issues.
Perfect. Yeah, no, it's, but man, these numbers, I haven't seen numbers for today, if they've even announced it, but yesterday, 900 new cases, and they didn't update the total active, but it was at, like, 6,800 as of Friday, so you can only assume that, like, we've passed 7,000 now. It's just...
Yeah.
Yeah, I've been saying it. I don't think we're getting through this week without a lockdown. I think, check in with me a week today, yep. I think we're going to be in lockdown again. I think restaurants are going to be closed. Gyms are going to be closed. It's going to be a bad time. So, well, it's already a bad time, but now it's going to be a lockdown bad time.
So, speaking of COVID and social distancing and whatnot, I know you don't watch college football.
No.
And I don't really either, but I sort of, like, I saw the clip because I think it was also the game was playing at Kinjo when we were there last night.
Okay.
But Notre Dame beat Clemson. Clemson's, like, basically the number one football, like, college football team.
Okay.
So they beat them, and then the entire crowd stormed the field.
What?
And so they're like,
what?
Like 2,000 people on the field.
Oh,
and they're
my
like,
God.
Fuck it, COVID doesn't exist for this moment.
Jesus.
So that, like, that video that I showed you isn't, like, it's not the best angle, but.
No, I got enough of it. I got enough perspective there.
Yeah, I saw one that was just, like, the top-down angle of, like, the whole stadium, and literally just all of the crowd just descended from the stands onto the field. Like, oh, no.
This is why they're reporting, like, over 100,000 new cases a day as a country. Like, it's just fucking out of control. God help Biden, honestly. Like, that man is coming into a fucking shitstorm.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I was going to say, how do you fix it? But, like, you just actually
it's
have
damage
a proper
control.
Lockdown.
It's damage control at this point. Like, fuck me. I mean, no one was prepared. But, like, well, I shouldn't say that. I guess a couple countries, like South Korea, handled it pretty decently. But, like, yeah.
New Zealand, I think, did it the best. They were, like,
they got down to zero at one point, didn't they?
They have one case right now, as far as I know. But they're in the hospital, and they're, like, quarantined, which is the way it should be. But I've had this conversation with, like, a ton of people that I've talked to, and New Zealand did it right. They were, like, you have X amount of time to get supplies, because then we're going to be shutting down for a few weeks. So get your shit ready.
Do they shut down, like, stores as well?
I think they shut down everything, yeah.
Wow.
So they basically gave people time to, like, get their supplies, get ready for a lockdown.
Yeah.
And then they just, like, fully lock down.
Wow.
Which is really the way, like, if you lock down for 3 weeks, no one's going in and out. No one's, like, going around spreading it. Hey, there you go. One case now.
Yeah. I mean, South Korea as well, they never locked down, but they were so aggressive with their contact tracing. They were like, we have an outbreak, we're fucking containing it.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I don't think they're at zero cases, but, like, given that they were the first or second country outside of China to have a major outbreak, like, they've contained it extremely well.
Yeah.
And then...
But, again, like, them and, like, a few of the other Asian countries have had... previous like
well that's exactly why
MERS,
yeah that's exactly why so they were prepared from that. And then you have other countries that are like, pandemic, what's that, we're gonna cut funding. And then the pandemic came and it's like, who could have foreseen this?
Yeah,
I fucking wonder.
We would you just hope that if there's ever another outbreak, like,
that they remember this
one
this hopefully
time there isn't, but yeah, hopefully they're like,
well, there will
what happened last time.
Yeah, well, there will be these pandemics of different scales. Like, you have SARS, you had MERS, now you have this. It's like every decade or so, you get one. To a different, like, scale. Some are, like, smaller scale but much more lethal. Some, like COVID, have a lower death rate but are extremely viral.
Yeah.
It's going to happen again, and it's just like, can we fucking remember this time? There was, I don't know if I've mentioned it on the podcast before, but there's a Netflix Vox show called Explained, and in November last year, they did an episode called The Next Pandemic, where they had experts come in and talk about, like, the next pandemic is coming, here's where it's likely to come from, here's, like, what the spread of it could be and the impact. And watching it, it's like fucking prophecy. This was, like, a month before COVID was first reported.
Let's take Hi, a quick Dakota. Stop here. All right, we're back. Sorry, my dog ran downstairs. He's usually the culprit of most of our stops.
But yeah, so I was saying, like, watching it now, it's like prophecy. It's like so much. Like, they talked about, like, well, there's a good chance it'll come from the wet market in China, looking at where past pandemics have come from, or originated, I should say. It's like so much of what they were talking about was just like, wow. Like, a month before the first case of COVID was reported, like, it's clear that this is something that, to an alarming extent, was predicted. Like, it really is, like, shocking how much of this was accurately predicted and expected, and governments just didn't listen. It's not an immediate problem, so it wasn't something that they cared about.
Well, I think one of the issues also was, like, apparently China knew about COVID in, like, September of last year.
Oh, really?
So they had already had a case or a small outbreak of COVID by September, and then it had only been announced or made public in, like, November-ish, or, like, end of November.
Mm.
And then that was, like, when the whole world was like, holy shit, like, China has COVID cases and it's spreading to other places right now. And then come, like, February, you had it in, like, early cases in, like, sort of North America or Europe.
Well, that's the thing. I remember, like, originally it was kind of seen as like, oh, wow, this is a big problem in China. Guess we're not going to China. And then it, like, started picking up elsewhere.
Yeah, and then, like 2 weeks later, it was, like, all over Asia.
Yeah. It's like, okay, it's a couple other countries. You know, it was, like, Spain and South Korea. It's like, okay. Or Italy first, I think it was Italy and South Korea and then Spain as well. It's like, okay, it's in a few countries, but whatever, it's contained. And then, yeah, you got a few cases in North America. And I remember, aged more poorly than anything else he has said, I would argue. Lane was like, and Trump was like, there's 16 cases, it's fine, it'll go away, and in 2 weeks, we'll be COVID-free.
2 weeks, they had the record.
Yep, so it's, boy, by, yeah, that escalation of just like, oh, it's like in one country, oh, okay, now it's in a couple countries, oh, fuck, it's everywhere.
Yes.
Yep.
On that note of staying inside winter season and the whole Netflix documentary.
Mm-hmm.
There has been tons and tons of Netflix shows and just TV shows in general that capture people's attention.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to ask you, especially since you're in film, what has been sort of your favorite or, like, best TV that you've seen on Netflix, or just in general, I guess?
In general, gosh.
We'll make a top five this episode.
Sure. Wow. TV shows, that's hard. Like, I have, like,
if you say Friends, we're okay. No, stopping it right now.
No. I Jessica Jones, for me, I watched the first season, and I fucking loved the first season. Mm. It's one of my favorite seasons of television ever. Season two was a fucking slog to get through. I really had to force myself through it, and I did not think it was anything, like, that special or unique. I think it lost a lot of what was so compelling about the first season. And I haven't even watched a third. So that, for me, went from one of my favorite seasons of any television series to just extremely forgettable. Mm. So as a whole, when I talk about the show, it's like, yeah, I love Jessica Jones season one.
Yeah.
And that's basically it. Recently I finished watching The Queen's Gambit. It's amazing how well Netflix is doing in the pandemic. Just, they have so much fucking content that it's just like, yeah, whatever. I'm pretty sure they addressed that early on in the pandemic as well. They're like, yeah, we have a lot of content lined up. We're fine. I finished watching The Queen's Gambit. Absolutely loved that show. It was fantastic.
Yeah, so what is that about? Because I've seen that and I've, like, thought about watching it and then I was like, eh.
Yeah, so it's a fictional drama about this, like, chess prodigy, basically. And it starts with her at a young age when she first learns to play chess. And then, and that's like the first episode, is her at a young age. And then it time skips to her in her early teens and pretty quickly catches up to her late teen slash adult life, which is where a majority of the show takes place. And it's basically just, yeah, following like her chess career as she like rises through the ranks and tries to take down the top players. That's like the simplest way of putting it. But it's a really fucking good drama. Anya Taylor-Joy is the lead actress, and she's awesome. I mean, all the performances are awesome, but like so much time is spent even with her just like alone, just her on her own. It's amazing how much she just carries that entire show. Like, it very much is a show specifically like about her and her life and her experiences. And yeah, no, she's fucking phenomenal. The show in general, like chess, I know to a lot of people probably doesn't sound like something that is very thrilling, but the show does such a good job of actually making chess something that's like exciting. Like they make every move, every action feel so like calculated and intense and high stakes. And like,
which it really is. Like,
it is. And like, credit to the actors for really conveying that, like, even just through like very subtle emotions. It's like, you know, they're playing people that are in a game, they need to be focused, but just subtle expressions and emotions that just convey like how stressed or worried or in control of a game they are, like, really phenomenally well done. It's only a 7-episode series, so it doesn't take long to get through. And yeah, I mean, I highly recommend it. It's a great show.
I might watch it. On that note, though, have you ever seen, there was like a study done, I feel like it was either a couple months ago or a couple years ago, and they were saying, it basically was explaining how many calories chess players burn in a day.
Oh, really?
Just from like the mental power of like thinking all these moves. Yeah. And it was like 10,000 calories a day.
What?
They sit there like in like a whole day tournament. They literally burn 10,000 calories at like the top end. Crazy.
That's insane.
Like, the amount of calories you'd have to burn, or like the amount of like exercise you'd have to do to burn 10,000 calories. Yeah. Ridiculous.
Yeah.
So like, it's actually kind of insane just like how much your brain, just your brain uses calories, which is, fuck, what else was I going to say? Something about, oh yeah, like, it's weird that chess is like becoming popular.
Is it?
Yeah. I mean, like, I see clips of like people playing chess on YouTube all the time, like unrelated to anything I watch. It'll just be like XQC or whatever, like this person, that person, like these big Twitch streamers that are just like playing chess.
Interesting. So, yeah, and I mean, like, the Queen's Gambit, like, I mean, it helps that you have a fairly well-known actress as the lead, but it was number one on Netflix for a while there. It's like, you wouldn't necessarily expect that of a chess show, and I think especially of a fictional one. Like, I think people will be drawn to, like, interesting true stories, but the fact that it's, like, completely fictional drama about chess, it's like, it doesn't seem like there's a lot there that would necessarily compel that many people to watch it, but I mean, it's seen huge viewership success, and it, by all means, is a fantastic show. So it's a bit surprising, but deserved that it's as popular as it is, I'd say.
Okay, so where does The Boys land in your like rankings?
Right. So The Boys is another show that I just recently binged. I hadn't watched it up until probably this last month, and I just binged the 2 seasons. That show is fucking phenomenal. Like, my God, it's
I don't think I've ever seen a show that like in the first season you're hooked instantly. You're just like, dude, this is fucking so good. Like, the first season is amazing, and it's not like, because a lot of shows, it's either, like, the first season does really well, and, like, all, like movies, like, the sequels kind of just suck, or the first season's shit because there's, like, so much character development and, like, developing the story, and then the second season is where it, like, really takes off.
Yeah.
But the whole thing is, like, insane. I mean, obviously, like, season two is sort of, like, another beast in its own.
Yeah.
But
it's one of those shows that, like, when I finished an episode, I was like, all right, I want to watch the next one. Like, it wasn't just like, oh, I'm bored, I'll watch the next one. It was like, you know what, I think I'll stay up and watch one more episode. You know, it's like, it was just so good. And I love how on the nose it is with, like, the reality, or, like, with our reality, where it's exaggerated, but it's not...
unrealistic.
It's not too distant from our own realities. Like, the one scene, oh gosh, I guess I shouldn't get into, like, any spoiler context. It is still fairly recent for season two, but there's a lot of moments that when you first watch them, they seem very exaggerated. It's like, wow, this is so over the top. And then you realize it's like, actually, that's not too far off from what we're actually going through. And it's just, it exaggerates it just enough that you can't miss it. You can't ignore it. It's very clear what they're trying to go for. But then when you, like, compare it to our own reality, it's like, oh, this is just a less subtle version of what we're going through and what we're experiencing, especially, like, with things like racial inequality and sexism and, like, especially, like, Trump's presidency as well. Yeah. Definitely a lot of kind of, like, references towards that. It's like, yeah, it's so over the top, but it's like, it's trying to be over the top to the point that you can't ignore it, but not to the point that it's unbelievable. It strikes a really interesting balance there. I really, really thoroughly enjoyed that show.
Yeah, I like, and I saw a quote that sort of, like, really was, like, illustrated this point really well. But basically, it's just, like, a satire of what we already, like, sort of live.
Yes, like, there you go. Obviously, that's a better way of saying it.
Yeah, obviously, like, superheroes aren't real, but if they were real, like, The Boys is the real world example of if that happened.
Yeah. No, that's a, yeah. No, that's, it's a satire on real life. That's a way better way of saying it. Yeah. No, but that show, and even beyond that, like, just the actual story itself is so good.
Yeah,
like,
the story is amazing. The twists that they have.
Yeah, yeah. It keeps throwing more and more twists that I don't expect. It's like, I think I know what's coming. And then it hits you, and it's like, wow, I had no fucking clue what was happening here.
Yeah.
Like, the not going to say what it is, but, like, the season two finale, I was like, I know what's happening here. And it's like, oh, no, I had no fucking clue what was happening here. Jesus.
Yeah. I sort of had an idea, like, halfway through season two.
Okay.
Because, like, I just noticed there was a pattern between, like, this character not being in scenes, but, like, weirdly being connected to them, like, in just a few scenes after.
Okay.
And then I was like, well, that seems a little weird.
I think for me, especially because I binged it, I had less time to think about it. Like, if you're watching it, because it came out on a weekly basis. It wasn't, like, a Netflix all at one drop, right?
Yeah.
So it's like,
for me, though, I binged basically the whole thing. I only had to wait for the last episode, the finale.
Okay. Because I was going to say, if you're watching it, like, one episode a week, you have a lot more time to think about it. So, that's kind of, I think, almost something nice about binging is, like, you don't have time to overanalyze and, like, kind of ruin it for yourself, in a way. It's like, when I binge stuff, it's like, I'm just going one episode to the next. I'm not spending time thinking about, like, oh, what comes next? I just go watch it. And so, I never kind of get in my own head about it. Because sometimes, when you think about it so much, you do end up ruining the surprise for yourself.
Yeah. I think, honestly, like, I think TV, they sort of have the leniency to, like, do that more, where they, like, they can lead you on a path a lot longer and a lot deeper because they know they have a lot more runtime and they have time in between.
Sure.
So, like, they know in the time between people are going to start sort of overthinking it or, like, thinking about it. Whereas I feel like in a movie, sometimes, like, the reason why I don't like movies with, like, a quote-unquote twist is because it's, like, you knew it at the beginning because they did so much foreshadowing and, like, it's almost like they had to because they only have, like, 2 to 3 hours to explain it.
Sure.
That you're just like, okay, well, that's sort of obvious. Like, there's a few movies that just way out of left field, you're like, fuck, I had no idea that was going to happen. But
sure,
with TV, I feel like, yeah, you can kind of go so far in one direction, especially when you have, you know, a series like The Boys where, like, every episode's an hour long. It's like every episode is basically its own movie.
Yeah. And it helps as well, I imagine, that they have the source content to draw from. Like, The Boys finished its run years ago. That story is done. So they have the luxury now of, like, okay, we have a complete blueprint. We can twist this and change it as we want, but we have a complete guide here. So you can start season one from episode one, already starting to build, like, larger plot lines. Like, I think Attack on Titan. I don't know if you've watched it at all. No. I don't expect you have, but that show is fucking fantastic for, like, literally there are plot elements that start in episode one, like not little like Easter eggs either, like very explicit in your face plot lines that are started in episode one that aren't resolved until season three, like late season three. They literally spend three seasons building out all of these storylines right from the first episode. And like in the like second half of season three is when they all start to like resolve and click. And it's like, holy shit, you've spent years building this because they already knew from the beginning because the story was already told. So I think that's kind of the nice thing about series like those. And potentially the flaw with series like Game of Thrones, which eventually hit a point where they needed to start making their own content. And like when you look at Game of Thrones, there's a drop off when they had to start making their own content. Obviously, they had George R. R. Martin's like involvement and they had his like general guidance of like, okay, here's where the story is going for the most part, like the key elements. But the little like actual how you tell that story, like the actual, you know, details, the path of how you get there, that was up to them. And that's where a lot of people feel like the show kind of fell off. So, I mean, I feel like shows like The Boys, they benefit from having the complete story already and just being able to change it as they see fit.
Mm. Also, I like their real world references. Like, I think it's season two where they're talking about the Joss rewrite.
Man, yeah, that part killed me. So good. It's so good. Yeah, no, I love that show. I just got Amazon Prime, so that's like the first show I watched on there. Mm. But man, like I have so much to go back and watch. Oh, I have to watch
Tour.
Grand Tour, I've seen some of. Okay. For me, that's like a like chill show of like, oh, I need to put something on while I eat or whatever. But like in terms of like drama series and stuff, like I need to watch Marvelous Miss Maisel, Man in the High Castle, not an Amazon original, but Mr. Robot, I've heard fantastic things about. So it's one of those things like, oh, got a new service, and now I have, like, you know, 30 new things to watch on top of the, you know, hundreds on Netflix that are still on my backlog.
I'm not going to lie. The Amazon Prime shows are definitely, they don't feel as, like, compelling to watch. Like, The Boys, obviously, is, like, it's so good.
Yeah.
But, like, okay, I guess, you know, Mr. Robot doesn't count because it's not, like, an Amazon original. No, it's just
they have the licensing.
But there's, like, a bunch of Amazon original shows that I'm like, I could care less about. Like, was it Jack Ryan or whatever?
I was just thinking the same thing when you said that. I was like, yeah, Jack Ryan. Like, big IP, big lead actor, really couldn't care about it.
Yeah. John Krasinski's sick. I'll watch basically anything he's in, except for Jack Ryan. Because I just don't really care. If I want a cool fucking action series, I'll watch 24, like, you know, something.
Yeah, nothing that I've seen. Maybe it's a good show. I know nothing about it. But just from, like, the little ads I've seen, it kind of just looks like generic Mission Impossible. Like, it's like Chinese knockoff brand Mission Impossible. It's like, I don't need that.
It's like a step up from, what is it, Underground or whatever?
Oh, yeah, what's Six it? Underground, yeah, the fucking Michael B. God, that I had a drive to Edmonton, like I was just a passenger, but I had a road trip to Edmonton, and I was like, all right, I have, you know, 3 hours to kill or whatever, I'm gonna watch Six Underground. My God, that film is so fucking bad,
yeah,
and it made Netflix so much money, like,
which is I don't understand how Michael Bay keeps getting on for movies and how his movies keep making money.
Well, that's exactly it. He keeps getting, I don't know why they keep making money. I guess just dumb popcorn movies and people eat it up. And Netflix, like some of Netflix's biggest hits are some of their worst movies. Like Six Underground, a bunch of like Adam Sandler shitty movies.
Yeah.
Not Uncut Gems, but like his shitty like comedies. It's like they make Netflix so much money. They're always the top movies because people just eat up dumb movies. Like, it's just dumb, easy to digest content. And yeah, Netflix, as long as people are watching it, Netflix will put millions of dollars behind it. Like, Six Underground was a massive budget. Like, it was a massive action film.
Well, you need that when you're blowing up everything in sight. Exactly.
But it's like, it's such a bad movie and it costs so much to make. But it was a huge success for them. And I think they're doing a sequel. Because why wouldn't they?
Seven Underground.
What if it starts counting down? It's like five, four. Yeah.
Oh my god. If they get to one, we're done.
No. They get to zero, and then they go into the negatives.
Oh my god. No, they start doing the prequels from 10. They'll do it like the reverse Star Wars.
Oh god.
But bad because it's Michael Bay.
Oh no. It's amazing to me how much, like, when Netflix puts something out, it can be some of the best shit that's ever been made. Like, you have, like, I haven't seen them, but Roma and The Irishman, like, I, like, that people just sing praises about. Or you can just have the trashiest shit ever, and it doesn't fucking matter to them because it's all successful for them. I mean, it's amazing how much Netflix content there is now that you never hear about. Because there's just such an overwhelming amount. Some of it is trash. Some of it is great. Like, I'll go online and it'll be like, Netflix canceled three series. And it's like, I haven't heard of any of them. And I search them up and they're all like critically acclaimed. It's like, how come I haven't heard of them?
Yeah.
It's like, Netflix just has such an overwhelming amount of content. They've been at this point for a while now, but they just keep cementing this position further where, honestly, you can just subscribe to Netflix for their content. Like, even if you don't watch any licensed content on Netflix, you can just subscribe for their originals. They have so much to offer in a variety of genres of, like, you know, family content, adult content, kids content, like, good shit, bad shit. They have so much of everything. And it's amazing how quickly they built up that catalog. Like, it was only, what, 2013 that their first series came out, House of Cards?
Yeah, I think so.
Like, in less than a decade, they went from having no original content to, like, being able to sustain their entire service off of original content.
Yeah. Well, and, like, I mean, financially, most of their cash burn is literally buying things or spending on,
oh yeah, they spend, like, series. Billions.
Yeah.
Billions. Like, I think, was it this year, last year, something like that, they were like, yeah, we're spending $15 billion on original content. Yeah.
It's because, like, yeah, going forward, all the investors were like, you guys okay? kind of spending a lot of money.
Yeah.
And then, obviously, with COVID, they're like, no, we're good. We're just going to keep pushing
it
out.
Yeah, they have so much. And it's like, don't get me wrong, obviously, their productions had to get halted because of COVID, so you might start to see that impact next year. Before this year, like, Disney's been okay because of Disney Plus. Like, they had that as a fallback, but that was their fallback. Like, their theatrical releases, their theme parks. I mean, I guess if we're just talking about media, we should just be fair and compare apples to apples. So their like, theatrical releases, that was a huge hit for them. But with the exception of Black Widow, which they kept delaying, I think any other theatrical movies they had that were supposed to come out this year, they just shifted to Disney Plus.
Yeah.
And it's like, and now they've seen so much success with that they announced that they're shifting their focus to streaming. Not that they're abandoning theatrical releases, but they merged, like, some of their divisions internally, and they're like, we're focusing on streaming going forward. And Netflix, they didn't even fucking skip a beat. It wasn't like, oh god, what do we do now? It's like,
yeah, they actually started doing better because of COVID, because so many more people were at home watching, and, like, no one else had any other choice.
Yeah, no, so while all these other companies, all these other studios are trying to figure out, like, what the fuck do we do? Like, we need to find a way to make these things profitable. Netflix is like, nah, we're fine. It's good.
Yeah, I feel like I don't, because, like, you're saying, like, Disney Plus, or Disney has focused their efforts on Disney Plus.
Mm.
I don't understand why they didn't just, like, go sort of all in on it, like, right away. Because, like, they got a ton of subscriptions in the very beginning.
They did, yeah.
And then they've had all these, like, Marvel shows that people have been, like, I literally got Disney Plus for Marvel,
mm-hmm.
and now, like, none of it has come out yet.
Well, that's the thing, is, like, to be fair, I think the Marvel shows were impacted because they were still in production.
Yeah, but so even, like, Black Widow,
so there was a report that apparently Kevin Feige is the one stopping it. Hmm. Like, that otherwise, if Disney had their way, it would have been on Disney Plus. Yeah. And that Kevin Feige is the one stopping it. Because other than that, it's like, Hamilton was moved up to go on Disney Plus, which was a huge boost to that service. And I imagine that's probably kind of what made them be like, oh, okay, we should shift some of our other theatrical releases. So now, like, Soul is coming on Christmas Day. Onward got, like, an early release there, as did Frozen 2, after their theatrical releases, but they got early releases on Disney+. Mulan was, like, an interesting test of how much money can we get from people. And it seems to be a test that they were like, okay, let's not. Because, like, Hamilton, here's the way I look at it. Hamilton was just part of your subscription. Huge success. Mulan was $35. And they said it was successful. But now with Soul, the upcoming Pixar film, it's back to the Hamilton model of we're just giving it to you with your subscription. So I can't help but feel like that means Mulan was not as successful as they were hoping.
Which is what I was saying. It was like, it's probably more of like a psychological thing. Mm. Where, like, I mean, they know they're going to probably at least break even with Mulan if they charge people $35.
Mm-hmm.
But they're not going to capture a lot of their audience because everybody's like, I already pay you.
Yeah.
Why am I paying more for a movie that I can watch in a month?
Well, that's the thing. And that's the other thing is it's like, it'll work the opposite way as well, where people may not even have interest in a film, but if you give it to them, they'll watch it.
Yeah, if it's free. Dude, yeah. The amount of things I've watched on Netflix that if it wasn't free, I wouldn't have watched it. I was like, yeah, sure, whatever. I'm bored. It's on Netflix.
Yeah, it's like I'm already paying for this. Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, Mulan is not a movie I'm willing to pay for. Will I watch it when they add it in December? Yeah, sure.
Yeah, let alone do I really care about watching it after it's gotten shitty reviews. But if I'm bored one day and it's on there, hey, I'll watch it.
Yeah, exactly. That's the thing. It's like you deter people who are interested by putting a paywall, whereas with no paywall, you get people who aren't interested.
Yeah.
So I feel like that probably just works better. Who knows? Maybe for their big, high-budget live-action films, like, those are the ones they make you pay for. Like, maybe if they reached a point where they put Marvel movies on there, those would also come with the price tag. So maybe, like, something like Soul, even though it's by all means, like, a high-budget production, maybe it's still just, like, not on the level of Mulan, and they're fine giving that away. But I don't know. I would personally, as a consumer, hope that they've just evaluated which business model is more successful and said, we should just include it as the subscription.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, like I said, I don't want to pay $35. Like, there are a few movies I would do it for, like Black Widow, sure, I would do it for, probably. But, like, most movies, no, I'm not going to. You give them to me, yeah, I'm going to fucking watch it, so.
So I have a theory with Disney and Disney Plus and releasing their Marvel stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like around Christmas, like, they're probably ready to release it. And they don't even care.
Oh, absolutely. Oh, yeah.
But they were probably thinking, like, they probably knew about all of, like, Netflix's stuff.
Mm.
And they knew, okay, well, Netflix is going to release it all, and it's going to be hard to compete with them. But if they're like, if we release it in December when everybody's home, and January when everything's already dead, then we capture the entire market. And you've kept people waiting, and now they're like, well, now I have to watch it because I've been waiting, like, a year.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing. It's like, Soul doesn't just release in December. Soul releases Christmas Day. That is an extremely intentional move of people are going to be together. Kids are going to want something to do.
Yeah.
Let's release a brand new film for $9. Like, assuming you don't have a subscription, you pay $9. That is, like, almost any adult is going to be like, sure, I will gladly fucking pay $9 for all of us to watch a film. And if you already have a subscription, then they just secured, you know, another year or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So, or another month or whatever you may. And then, yeah, come next year, you're going to start getting the Marvel shows. And yeah, no, I mean, the pandemic has been a huge boon for Disney Plus. It's just, because they weren't so focused on it to begin with, they weren't entirely prepared for that success, I don't think. Like, they didn't necessarily have as much content as they could have. But yeah, I mean, going forward now, renewed focus. And it's interesting what this pandemic has done as a whole to how we consume content. Like, I believe it was Universal has already said, like, they're going to do, like, home releases for their movies much sooner after theatrical release. So, And I would hope now with studios focusing on home content that theaters get more competitive, like lower your prices, literally just lower your prices. It's all I want from you. There's nothing more to add to that list. Just like people are going to stay home if they can, if it's like, oh, I pay, you know, even if it's just one person, maybe you pay $10 more to rent it and you're in the comfort of your home. If you have more than one person, you're breaking even, if not saving money, to watch it at home. And so it's like, especially if you're getting like snacks or whatever, I never get snacks because fuck that. I don't want to spend my entire bank account going to watch a movie. But like, if you go get snacks and shit, like that is an expensive outing. It's like
$50 for a movie.
As opposed to just like, oh, here, I'm at home. I'll eat what I have at home. I'll, you know, I'll have crying kids or whatever. So I hope this compels theaters to become more competitive.
Yeah. Yeah, because, I mean, to be fair, though, like, they, I understand why their prices are high, because, like, they have to run all this stuff. They have a huge, a huge building, huge plot of land, a bunch of employees, and they have to pay for all of their, like, snacks and everything. So, like, that I sort of understand. And their price, like, obviously the actual, like, movie production companies are, like, taking, you know, a percent of all the ticket sales. So it's like they're only getting like a fraction.
Well, a
of
majority.
What
I would assume the theater chains there taking a percent.
So like they're the theater chains only getting like a percentage.
Yeah.
On the ticket sales, and then they make most of their money on their food, which is overpriced anyways.
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing: someone like Landmark, like, so the main theater chain here is Cineplex, but you also have Landmark as a smaller competitor. Landmark seats far fewer people per theater. They charge less for their tickets, and they're somehow growing. And it's like, that to me really shows how shady Cineplex is, where Cineplex will cram way more, like not even twice as many. Like, you're probably talking like four times as many seats per screening room, and they're charging more. And it's only like, you know, a dollar or two more. But when you have so many more people, think about like a launch day on a, or an opening day, sorry, for like a Marvel movie or something where it's going to be packed, and you have four times as many people paying, you know, $2 more each or whatever. It's like that adds up very quickly. And it's like, it's honestly, Landmark, I'm okay with. Don't get me wrong, I'm sure their snacks are still overpriced, but like the prices they pay, or sorry, the prices they charge for their tickets, for the experience they give you, I'm fine with. Cineplex charges more for a shittier experience. You are jam-packed in there. The seats are usually, like, all worn down. And they're almost always just the basic, like, shitty recliner seats anyways. It's a bad experience for a higher price, and they get away with it because they're the biggest chain.
Hey,
so,
let's not forget their pre-screening games that you can play.
Just kidding. With that, like, three people
play.
I'm like, I try to be one of those people if I arrive early enough, because I know I get free scene points off of that. But yeah, no, it's like, Landmark was already growing, and I was hoping that would kind of push Cineplex to be competitive. But now, with, like, the rise of home media consumption, it's like, okay, you're really gonna need to compel people. Like, people already went to you reluctantly. Like, just because the Cineplex theaters are everywhere, and it's just like, all right, this is close to home. I want to watch this movie, fine, whatever. But now if you can go to home, or you have a nicer theater chain to go to for less, like, I don't know why you would go to Cineplex. Aside, like, it really is just the convenience, but their convenience is diminishing now.
Yeah. I feel like the only reason why it's still sort of, like, viable is because the amount of times people actually go to a theater is already low. Like, there might be a small group of people that go pretty often, but, like,
yeah, see, I'm part of that group.
Yeah, the amount of people I know that go often is, like, pretty low. Most people are just like, yeah, just watch movies at home, or, like,
yeah. And see, here's my thing. I go to a theater, used to go to a theater pretty often, but most of the movies I'm watching are not bombastic, like, Marvel films or whatever. It's, like, stuff like Parasite, Little Women, The Invisible Man. It's like, these are not films that I need to experience on a giant screen with the biggest sound system. Like, I don't need that kind of experience for a period drama or whatever, you know? Like, Knives Out. When I went to go see Knives Out, I couldn't even see it in a normal theater at Cineplex. You had to watch it in Ultra AVX. And it's like, why do I need Dolby Atmos for a bunch of fucking dialogue? Yeah. Like, I don't, this is overkill. I don't need this. So it's like a majority of films I watch, I'm fine just watching on my TV at home because they're not these grand scale movies. So, yeah, I mean, I would love if I have the option to just watch most of those at home, and I'll go to the theater once in a while to go watch Star Wars or, you know, Marvel or whatever. Even Star Wars is like, you know, their television shows tend to be better. So even that, like Solo, I did not go watch in theaters because it was just like, yeah, it's a fine Star Wars film. I was like, cool, I'll watch it at home. I don't really care. Rise of Skywalker, I went to go see in theaters. That was a mistake.
Yeah.
That film I did not need to see at all in my life ever. Mandalorian? Mandalorian's like the best Star Wars, like, if you're talking about, like, their, like, passive visual content. Like, I don't want to say, like, visual media because you might get video games grouped in there. But as far as, like, between their movies and TV shows, Mandalorian is, like, the best Star Wars content since, like, I would say Rogue One, which was, like, 2016, which was the best Star Wars content in a long time. Yeah. It's, like, eh, you're kind of just, you're making really compelling TV shows. Like, how often do we need to go to
movies? On the note of Star Wars, do you think George Lucas is happy with the bag he got from selling it?
Oh,
or
dude.
Is he like, oh, my baby, you butchered it. It's shit.
I think if he cared that much, he wouldn't have sold it. Like, yeah, Lucasfilm, to my knowledge, was not a struggling company. It wasn't like Marvel.
Yeah.
Marvel was... Now, granted, once they got the MCU up and running, they were doing okay. But before the MCU, they were struggling hard. Like, Iron Man saved Marvel. And
what was their, like, last film before... Wasn't it, like, the original Hulk movie?
That was actually after... Iron Man, like
I'm talking about the one that like has Abomination.
Oh,
because that's technically in the MCU.
Okay.
I'm talking the original one with Eric Bana.
Oh, yeah, I'm not sure. Something in the early 2000s, I'm sure.
Yeah,
and
like
they had like the
three or something. Or
they had like oh god, they had like Daredevil with Ben Affleck. They
oh
had,
god, like, yeah.
Fucking Ghost Rider with Nick Cage.
Ah,
didn't they have a
Punisher
film as well?
Let's not talk shit about that.
Well?
Nick Cage.
Not talking shit about Nick Cage. No,
those
no,
abs.
Do you have abs in that film?
Yeah, they were photoshopped on. You know, I guess you never saw the film, but
I saw like bits.
So there's, it's like it's been memed now, but there's a scene where he like gets home after whatever. I think it was like his motorcycle show or whatever, right? Because he's like an extreme daredevil guy.
Yeah,
and he like takes his shirt off, and it's just like Nick Cage, but then this like very obviously CG'd like abs. It's so dumb.
But yeah, so Marvel was struggling as a company. I don't think Lucasfilm was. Like, I think they were doing all right. So if he chose to sell to Disney, I imagine he was happy with the bag.
Yeah, he probably sold it and he was like, meh, I have my time with Star Wars. Y'all can have it. I have my, like, $1 billion.
Yeah, well,
or whatever.
Good few billion. I am still forever mad, as everyone is, that Disney canceled Star Wars 1313. Do you remember this game?
No.
This was a game. So Lucasfilm had a division called LucasArts, which did video games.
Yeah.
And they did some other stuff like Grim Fandango and Day of the Tentacle. But primarily, at least towards the end of their life, they did Star Wars games. And they announced an open world bounty hunter game called Star Wars 1313.
Okay, that sounds sick.
And they show gameplay of it as well. Like, it wasn't just the cinematic trailer. There is gameplay out there on YouTube. Yeah. And it was on Coruscant. So 1313 is in reference to, like, the planet Coruscant is, like, a level structure. And as you get lower in the levels, it's kind of like you find the scummier, shadier people. So 1313. It's what? Yeah, basically. So 1313 was, like, the low-level, like, scummy, shady people of Coruscant. And yeah, you were a bounty hunter operating here. And it was, like, an open-world Star Wars game. And everyone was like, this is so fucking cool. Like, it was going to be, like, I think it was going to be an M-rated, like, mature, dark, gritty Star Wars game. And then Disney was like, nope, that doesn't vibe with us.
Yeah, they were like, hey, it doesn't hit the Disney rating, so.
Yeah, So that's disappointing. And then under Disney, they were making a new open world Star Wars game, which got canceled. And then they started making another one that also got canceled. Like, I think they canceled, like, this was under EA now.
I was about to say, those money-hungry whores paired with another money-hungry whoring company in EA.
Yeah, I think they canceled this project two or three times, because originally it was being developed by this new open-world game. I don't know if they took anything from 1313, but this new open-world game was being developed by Visceral, the guys that did Dead Space, and is being led by Amy Hennig, the creator of Uncharted. And it's like, okay, the Dead Space devs, led by the creator of Uncharted, are doing an open-world Star Wars game. That's fucking cool. EA apparently was not happy with how long they were taking and canceled it. They sent the remnants of those projects to a different studio to then work on it as like its own Star Wars game. Like, retool this, take what there is and make a new game out of it. And then they canceled that as well. And then I think there was a third Star Wars game they canceled, which was like a Battlefront spinoff. And it's like, Star Wars, I feel like the movies are how most people experience Star Wars, but I feel like that's a property that really thrives from its extended universe stuff, like the television shows and the video games that kind of break away from that main Skywalker saga. I think especially towards the end with like episode 9, it's like, and to a lesser degree, the entire sequel trilogy, it really felt like they were just drawing out that original story for no reason. It's like, just do your own thing. And I feel like that's where stuff like The Mandalorian and the video games thrive. Is it's like, okay, we get to take the best of Star Wars without being confined to what has already been done. And so it's such a shame that, like, it seems like there's so much wasted potential here, where it's like, EA has had the license now for, like, 7 years, I think, and they've made one single-player game. They had a campaign in Battlefront 2, which in my opinion was kind of mediocre. But yeah, it's like you've had one single-player focused game. It's like, you have one of the most lucrative properties in media. Like, yeah. And you're wasting it. Ugh.
I hate when you have, like, boneheaded businesses that make, like, sort of the money decision,
uh-huh,
or what they think is the money decision,
yeah,
where they just take the path of least resistance,
and they'll
either like keep milking something, or they don't go and do something that like everybody clearly wants. Like, you see Fast and Furious, like, just shut it down. It's not even like the same cast anymore, basically. It's just something completely different. Star Wars,
yeah.
And then you have fucking what is it, Mad Max, where they like decided to just, you know, not pay their director what was owed to him, and now they've just ruined
me more Mad Max.
Fantastic, exactly. I just want more Mad Max.
I'm not asking for much.
Like, did you ever play the game?
I have not,
dude. Like, legit, one of my favorite single player games.
Yeah.
Period. It's like, it's very simple, but like, oh, it's so good.
Yeah.
And it's just like, it's the Mad Max universe, so it's like, it's just enjoyable in general.
Yeah, that's an interesting game. That it's like, I don't know. Mad Max is not the property I'd expect a video game to be made of, let alone an actual good video game. But hey, there you go. I mean, they gave it to like a competent studio. That's the thing. It's, and I'm glad we've broken away from this. I feel like in the past, like, movie adaptations were just done by like studios that specialized in licensed games, just churning them out quickly, like the original like Iron Man and the original Thor and Captain America. Those had just like licensed adaptations that I'm not even sure those studios exist anymore. I think it might have been THQ that was doing that.
Wait, hold on, there was like Iron Man and Thor games?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, what? they were direct adaptations of the live action movies, and they were like, bleh. Like, they weren't good.
Yeah, I didn't even hear about this.
Yeah, well, that's the thing, because they're just churned out, because it's just quick and easy money. I'm glad now that these properties actually go to, like, dedicated studios that are, like, or I shouldn't say decades, but, like, actual studios that, like, know how to make good games, and it's not just a quick cash grab. Like, with Harry Potter, like, there was I remember playing a Deathly Hallows Part 2 adaptation. Just a straight adaptation of the movie. Very mediocre game that was just thrown out there. But now you have a studio that was, who did they acquire it from? I think it's Avalanche, different Avalanche from the Mad Max one. But Avalanche Studios that previously did licensed content, but now they're building a Harry Potter game from the ground up. It's not connected to the movies or the books. It's a prequel set way far in the past. And it's like, and prior to this, they have done some licensed games, like they did like Cars and stuff, but they also did Disney.
Fantastic game, by the way.
They did like the more recent ones. I don't know if those are any good.
Oh, okay.
But they did Disney Infinity, which was another case of like, here's a good IP or a lot of valuable IP. Make your own game out of it. And Disney Infinity was honestly a pretty fun game. Like, as far as the Toys to Life games go, it was very well done. And I just appreciate that, like, I think companies kind of hit a point where they realized we could be making more money if we actually spend time, like, developing this content or giving studios the time to develop this content and do their own thing with it instead of shoehorning them into just make a quick game, just like cheap and dirty, and just get it out the door for us to make money. Because now you have things like Spider-Man. You have things like, I was going to mention Avengers, maybe not the best example, but you have Spider-Man. You have Star Wars Jedi Fallen Order. You have this Harry Potter game coming up. And it's like, these are all large film franchises, but these studios are given the time and money and freedom to do their own thing with it and craft it as their own take on these properties, and it's usually better for it. And Mad Max as well, again, it's like that was unrelated to the films, but it's just like, take this IP, you guys have done like the Just Cause games, like you know what you're doing, here's the time and money, make the game you want to make with this property. And I feel like it usually turns out better than it would otherwise, so I appreciate that that's kind of the norm now.
Yeah, well, quickly back on to the TV, because we went on like a weird tangent.
We
I don't even remember what started the whole video game talk.
I think we went, I think I took it from like movies, like franchise movies to franchise games.
Right, okay. Because we were talking about like the best TV shows.
Mm-hmm.
I have to say, I like it's not the like the greatest, like in terms of story and everything, show that I've ever watched, but it's my favorite, I think, and it's The Office.
Okay.
Like, because I'm rewatching it now, and, like, it's still just as good as the first time I watched it. I mean, maybe it's because it's been a few years since I watched it, but, god damn, have you seen the whole Office series?
So here's the thing.
Don't even say it. I've never seen it.
I've heard that season one is a fucking slog to get through. Like, people just say season one is bad, but you just need to get through it, and then it gets really good. I watched two episodes of season one, and I was just like, nope.
Honestly, just start at season two, and then once you're done, go back to season one and just be like, ah, I'll just like finish
I hear it. I hear people saying it'll get better. I trust that it gets better, but it's just hard to power through something that you just don't enjoy.
On my second watch through, I didn't even watch season one. I got through the first episode because it's like kind of funny. And then the rest of it, I was like, ah, I'm just going to go season two. And now I'm like back onto like, I think I'm on season four or something now.
Mm.
But honestly, just start on season two. And then like from there, you'll be hooked. Because it's from season two onwards, so good. It is so fucking good.
Okay. Yeah, no, the only sitcom I've really, two sitcoms I've really gotten into are Brooklyn Nine-Nine, which I'm up to date on. Great show. And this one I'm not up to date on. I really enjoyed it, and I just fell off for some reason. I think it was when I started working. I just kind of got busy, and it went on my back burner. But the Netflix adaptation of One Day at a Time.
Yeah.
Because it was an older show that Netflix revived. Netflix sold it to a different network, so it's now, I think the network is called like Pop or something. But it started as a Netflix show, and that show was, it is great. I loved that show. I really need to go back and continue it. But those are the only two sitcoms I've ever genuinely enjoyed. Like, anything else I've seen, I just, especially shows with a laugh track. Like, that's kind of what surprised me about One Day at a Time, is I like it despite the laugh track. But I generally dislike when shows have a laugh track and they tell me when to laugh. And I think part of that is because I feel like shows often don't deserve it. Like, my parents, like, when I was growing up, like, you know, my parents would watch, like, Two and a Half Men, Big Bang Theory, that kind of thing. Like, Mike and Molly, just all those, like, shows that have laugh tracks. Everybody Loves Raymond, blah, blah, blah. And, like, don't get me wrong, those shows have funny moments. But for the most part, when I saw, like... Or when there was a joke or whatever, I felt like the laugh track was kind of telling me to find it funny,
yeah,
rather than the writing actually earning it. I mean, my parents enjoy those shows. Apparently, like, clearly a lot of people do, to each their own. They're very successful shows. But, like, Two and a Half Men especially, I don't recall ever really finding that show funny.
Mm.
And, like, I remember I was having a conversation with my dad at one point. He's like, well, that's probably because it's not really your style of humor. And I was like, because a lot of the Two and a Half Men jokes are, like, very, like, sexual in nature. And I was like, no, I can enjoy, like, good, dirty humor. I just feel like that show does it poorly.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, I definitely find a lot of people are sort of, like, torn on Two and a Half Men. It was a show that I liked, but I think one show, and we obviously already bashed it at the beginning here, but Friends... It was like, I think that is the worst show for, like, forcing the laugh track on people.
Because,
like, there will be times where, like, they barely say anything and they have a laugh track. And I'm like, where was the joke? What? What part of this needs a laugh track?
I feel like that's a lot of sitcoms. Like, honestly, personally, I haven't watched a lot of Friends, but from what I have seen, and that's the thing, most of these sitcoms, I just see bits and pieces as I, like, you know, I'm walking, like, to the kitchen or whatever, just, like, while I'm eating dinner, like... It happens to be what's on. So I haven't seen a ton of Friends especially. But when I do see clips, it doesn't seem any better or worse to me than any of these other sitcoms. I don't know. Like, it's... Again, they're super successful shows. I get that. But, like, especially Big Bang Theory. Like, and maybe Big Bang Theory I specifically dislike because I'm... kind of sometimes in that crowd that it's trying to poke fun at, but, like, the characters will literally just ramble off, like, random fucking nonsense to just sound like real nerdy, and the entire show is just like, haha, you're a nerd because you like this thing or whatever. And it's like, most people just have casual interests in these things, like Star Wars and Lord of the Rings and Star Trek and video games and stuff. It's like, most people that you talk to, you would never know are interested in these things because people are just casually interested, but it's so exaggerated and over the top and just, like, I don't know. Especially as someone that, like, has played games growing up and for, you know, for me, that's a huge part of my life. It's like, I hate when media perpetuates this idea of, like, oh, video games are for nerds and for losers and, like, only geeks play them, haha. I feel like Big Bang Theory is one of those shows that perpetuates it. It's like, most people play games.
Yeah, it's like, it's weird how society has this, like, affliction of, like, we're the cool side.
Yeah.
And then they, like, poke fun at all this stuff that, like, especially nowadays more than ever, is so, like, ubiquitous, everybody enjoys.
Yeah.
Like, it's weird, like, because I've always been, like, a very active person. Like, I never played, like, you know, the quote-unquote ball sports and everything. Mm-hmm. But, you know, like, I did BMX, and I was, like, always in sport for most of my life, always doing, like, active athletic stuff. But I also really love video games. Mm-hmm. And I've, like, pretty much always had an interest in that sort of stuff. And, like, I enjoy Marvel and, like, Star Wars and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. And it's, like, this weird... Like, I've noticed, like, a lot of my groups of friends will, like, have this weird sort of divide. And then, like, on some topics, like, everybody sort of just enjoys. Like, Marvel, like, basically everybody I know. I don't think I know a single person who's like, yeah, Marvel shit, like, this is for weird
people. Yeah, I mean, like, fucking Endgame's the highest grossing film of all time.
Yeah.
Like, mobile gaming, or gaming in general, makes more money than film and television. And, like, mobile gaming specifically is huge. Like, people that would not call themselves gamers, they play games. Like, it's just so normal. And I feel like it's a thing with an older crowd that they kind of look down on it. And to be fair, I also think that those shows largely find their audience in an older crowd, especially when you consider that younger crowds are largely shifting to streaming services and don't have cable in a lot of cases. So I feel like it is kind of like a an idea or an opinion, and that you'll kind of see fade away over time. But yeah, no, I just hate that it perpetuates these old like stereotypes, especially with like gaming. It's like esports is fucking huge. Like it was, I believe, Jimmy Fallon that had two players from the winning team of the Overwatch League on last year. And he was actually very respectful to them. Like, these are people that, like, you know, just won millions of dollars. And he respected them. And he gave them a fair interview.
I feel like he's had more, sort of, not practice, but more experience with, like, esports and, like, video game personalities. Because, like, I've definitely seen him go in on, like, it's funny when, I remember, I think it was Ninja, when he was on there, either on Jimmy Kimmel or Jimmy Fallon. Mm. And maybe it was Jimmy Kimmel. And he was just, like, basically poking fun at, like, oh, how much do you make, blah, blah, blah. Like, dog, this guy probably makes more than you.
Yeah, no, I remember Jimmy Kimmel has, like, poked fun at, like, streaming and stuff. And it's like, and yeah, people laugh at it. It's so funny because it's like, haha, yeah, nerds, why would you watch somebody play video games? That's why I really appreciate that Jimmy Fallon's, like, one of the big late-night talk shows. Never once in that interview did he, like, try and make fun of the fact that, like, they played video games for a living. He, like, seemed genuinely interested and did a good job of presenting them as, like, look, these are people that are making a legitimate living at being the top at what they do. It is impressive what they do.
Yeah. So, you know what? I think it's funny that, like, a lot of, especially older generations, make fun of, like, esports pros or whatever, or, like, streamers. And it's like, oh, you have people watch you play video games. It's like, well, generally, they're either a funny personality or they're very good at the video game.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like, you watch movies and watch people play make-believe on camera, which is like, it's entertaining. But yeah, it's like, how's that any different from somebody be like legitimately being good at a game? And like, it's like the same thing as watching a sport. Yeah. They're legitimately good at this activity and like clearly on top of like in the 1% or like even less than.
Yeah.
It's like, they do shit that, like, the average person's not going to be able to do. It's entertaining to watch.
And honestly, they're so successful. It's like, I'm sorry, I can't fucking hear you with all my checks.
Yeah.
Like, I can't hear you over all this money I'm making. Like, fuck. Don't get me wrong. Ninja's, like, the top tier. But, like, even then, like, esports players and stuff, like, especially in organized leagues like Overwatch League and COD League, like, they make an annual salary that they are guaranteed. And it is substantial. Like, yeah. I remember there was one player who was signed to the Overwatch League. He was 17. He was not old enough to play. They signed him anyways, and he was one of the highest paid players in the league because he was that good, and the team wanted him when he was old enough. So he was getting paid, I think, like, over $100,000 a year, literally to do nothing just so that his spot on that team was secure.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah, it's like, yeah, they have, like, a guaranteed contract that in most leagues is like well over 100,000.
Yeah,
but then they also get like a small percent, like any, like, I guess sport league, they get a small percentage of like merchandise sales, like ticket sales for events, streaming revenue. It's like they get well over $100,000.
Yeah,
whether they play or not.
That's not counting prize money either.
Yeah.
And like the thing as well, it's, you know, the timing of COVID was kind of unfortunate as they were starting to ramp up, but like Overwatch League this year was going to start going global, where they were going to travel, because before, all the teams traveled to California and they played in Blizzard Arena. But they were going to start going city to city and playing at the home team arenas. And I would assume COD League is going to do something the same, because they have the same like city structure for
their teams.
They
started doing it and then COVID fucked it up.
Oh, did they start?
Yeah, they had, I think, 3 or 4 events. And then right before the Chicago event, which was like Chicago Huntsman, ex original Optic Gaming, they're sort of like the largest organization. Mm-hmm. Right before their event, the COVID lockdown happened. They couldn't have their event. But funny enough, that organization was still the only organization in the entire CDL to break even.
Interesting.
So it's like, it's crazy how much money they bring in, even without an event, like losing money on that.
Yeah. Yeah, no, but it's like, these things are getting bigger and bigger, and like the prize pools keep getting bigger, and the money, like the Philadelphia Overwatch team, they're building, I think, like a $50 million esports arena in their home city. $50 million for an esports arena.
Yeah.
It's wild. Like, it's not a general sports arena that will double as an esports. It is esports, and they.
Well, I think they built in LA somewhere. I think it's in LA. They built an arena. It's like a multi-purpose esports arena.
Yeah,
but it's specifically meant for like whether you have Overwatch or League or CS or COD or whatever. It like that's where you host it.
Yeah. So the Fusion Arena, they said that like when it's not being used for esports, it'll be used for other events, as any arena is.
Yeah.
But yeah, it is being purpose built for esports. Which is just wild to me.
Which team was this?
Philadelphia. Fusion.
Yeah, so, like, you have one in Philly. You already have that arena in LA. It's like, you have these large city centers.
Yeah.
Of course they're going to make money.
Yeah. No, there's massive money behind. And this is just, we have to keep in mind, esports in the Western world is fucking nothing compared to fucking South Korea. And when South it comes Korea's to insane. CSGO, Russia. Like,
yeah, Russia and Europe still pale in comparison to like Dota.
Oh yeah, and no, all South that stuff Korea, in South Korea. When you look at South Korea and you look, because the biggest esports are League, Dota, like those like MOBAs. Like holy fuck, League World Champions is just on a ridiculous level.
The amount of I can't remember which. I think it was League World Champions. Maybe it was Dota, but I just remember they literally had to have like basically an outdoor arena. Where they just had, it was basically just like a music festival where they just had like the main stage was at the stage.
Yeah.
And then they just had screens throughout like the
League.
Crowd.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I would like believe that was League. Yeah.
Millions of people there.
Yeah. And like, Dota's prize pools, because Dota's prize pool is crowdfunded, is fucking ridiculous.
Yeah. The average like winnings is like over $1 million per tournament.
The grant. Yeah. Like the pool is, tens of millions of dollars for the pool. It's fucking ridiculous. But yeah, just the actual like scale of League, it's like they will sell out the biggest fucking arenas. Like I'm not personally a fan of like the game League.
Yeah.
But I am grateful that it exists just for how far it has pushed competitive gaming. Like they really are like the trendsetter for that.
Yeah, like again, I don't really like watch League or like a lot of their Dota or like Overwatch, but I like when that League of Legends World Champion was going on, dude. I watched that shit just to see the like shots of the crowd and like the interaction with the whole like event. I was like, this is fucking insane. The whole venue's crazy. Like the energy that's in there. Like I literally for probably a good hour was watching this shit, and I was like, dude, I don't even know what's going on because this is also pre me playing Smite. So like I had no idea what was going on in like MOBAs, but even then it was like fucking capturing.
Yeah, there was This is wild to me. They're building out League like it's fucking Disney and just doing everything they can. So
yeah, that's the other thing, yeah.
Riot has its own music label where
what?
They have multiple like characters in game that have like musical personas and they release music under these personas.
Oh my god.
Now, don't get me wrong. I don't think that's really necessarily unheard of like on a smaller scale. But Riot is doing it to a ridiculous extent. So they have like this one group that they call KDA. And they released one song back in 2018. And I was like, okay, sure, you did a one-off, whatever. But it blew up. And so they just released an entire like 5-song EP recently. To accompany this, they've done branding partnerships with Logitech and Secret Lab, where they have KDA-branded chairs and KDA-branded, like, gaming peripherals. On Spotify, KDA has 3.5 million monthly listeners.
Oh, my God.
They are not small. And here's the thing. The people that they have actually, like, doing the performances are not small stars. They have Bay Miller, who... Oh, what's she at? Bay Miller is at 11 million monthly users.
Jesus.
They have Madison Beer, who is 14 million monthly listeners. Like, they have literally some of the biggest artists in the world. They had Kim Petras featured on a song. Some of the biggest artists in the world are performing as these League characters for this virtual band.
Crazy.
Yeah. Like, I don't follow League at all. But I had to look into it because I kept seeing KDA pop up everywhere. I was like, what the fuck is KDA?
Yeah.
And it's just a virtual band, but with, like, big-name singers performing as these characters. It's fucking wild.
It's like they're taking the Gorillaz format and, like, really just
yeah,
going to another level with it.
Well, that's the thing, yeah, because And they even switch out, like, the singers voicing the actors, and they're like, yeah, you can't do this with a normal band, but with a virtual band, we can have the same, like, characters, like, the same members, so to speak, and just have different artists rotate in and out if we want to switch it up. And yeah, it is like Gorillaz. Gorillaz is, like, you know, the big one everyone thinks of when you think of a virtual band. But yeah, it's like, they now have, like, an entire virtual band that gets some people into League because they sell skins of the characters as well, like, in their, like, you know, band outfits or whatever. So it sells skins, it brings people to the game, and some people just listen to the music. They don't care about the game at all. They couldn't give a shit. They're not going to play the game, they're not going to watch it, but they enjoy the music. Like, League has become so big that it has grown beyond just being a video game. Like, they really are going full Disney with it.
Yeah, it's like, dude, I swear to God, if they come out with a fucking amusement park.
Bro, they could!
It's the full-fledged, like, it's come full circle.
Yeah, I mean, they're working on, like, so many spinoffs as well. They're doing, like, a single-player, like, League RPG. They have an entire publishing division in Riot for other companies that make games with the League IP. Like, they are now giving their IP to other studios and then just, publishing it.
Yeah, because they did, a mobile app, right? They had, like, a mobile game?
They have a mobile spinoff coming, which is also coming to consoles. That's a direct adaptation of League. Yeah, it's called, like, Wild Rift or something. But then they also have, like, a trading card game spinoff. Or, I guess I shouldn't say trading card, but, like, something in the vein of Hearthstone kind of thing. They have that kind of spinoff. And then, yeah, they're doing, like, a single-player RPG. I think they have, like, an indie-style game coming as well. Like, it's ridiculous how big League of Legends is.
Yeah. How do we... That's twice now that we've gone on, like, one topic on this episode, and then we're just like, boom, somewhere else.
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing. Yeah.
I just remember, like, I mentioned The Office, and now we're talking about how big esports is.
Yeah, it's funny how that happens.
All right. Really quick.
Yeah.
Because we're already, like, an hour 16 in, which is kind of crazy.
Yeah.
Top 5 shows right now.
I honestly don't have a list of top 5 shows, but I can give you my top 5 movies.
Okay. Top 5 movies, good. Okay.
I'm going to have to make this list up as I go along, because I know my top 3 after that, they kind of fluctuate.
Hold on. Let me guess your top 3.
Yeah, go.
Inception?
No.
No, not in top 3? Okay. No,
not anymore. Used to be.
Okay. Do you have a Marvel movie in there?
No.
No? Okay.
Nowhere. Oh, wait. No, technically I do.
Technically you do.
Yeah.
Is it like... Captain Marvel. No, I'm just kidding. Just the worst MCU movie.
No, The Incredible Hulk. God.
Is Endgame... No, Infinity War is better than Endgame, so...
Is it?
Yeah. 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 In terms of, like, actual movies.
The experience, I think, of Infinity War. Coming out of that theater and being like, holy shit, everyone's dead. I think that was, like... That was intense.
Really? I thought as a movie, Infinity War was better, but as an experience, Endgame was, like... Because it was just cap it off. It was, like, literally, from the beginning of the movie, just, like, a high point
that's
throughout
true.
The whole...
No, that's... Yeah, okay. Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Because then... Because, like, when they just... kill Thanos, you're like, what?
Yeah.
It's like,
yeah,
okay. 15 minutes into the movie and you're like, what the fuck just happened?
Yeah, okay. Yeah, no, that's fair. That's fair. I'll give you that one. No, so it's, all right. So my number one.
Wait, Civil War?
No.
Damn, really?
No. I'm surprised you're guessing MCU films when I said technically yes.
Yeah. Fuck, I don't know.
Okay, so my number one, it's Blade Runner 2049.
Really?
Yeah. I'm not gonna, I feel like a lot of people haven't seen this film, so yeah. I'm not gonna, like, spoil it, but I like that it didn't give in to typical movie tropes. It was a hard-hitting movie that was not afraid to kind of buck tradition in that regard, and I love it for that. Second would be my Marvel film, which is Into the Spider-Verse. Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. Yeah. I love fucking everything about that film. The story is good. The actors, like, the voice performances are good. I love all of the characters. The writing is so good. The animation, that has to be the most beautiful animated film I've seen. Like, it is just so wildly unique. I fucking love it. The music is great. Everything about that film, I fucking love. Number three for me would be La La Land.
Okay. Oh, yeah, I should have guessed that.
La La Land is fucking fantastic. Four and five, I don't know. They flux. Like, Inception would probably be up there. Like, right now, I would probably say, like, it would be Inception and Whiplash. Probably in the reverse order. I'd probably put Whiplash at number four and Inception at number five. But I don't know. Inception is a very fun movie. I do really like it, but I think my tastes have kind of just changed over time. But it's still a movie I do very much enjoy. But Whiplash was... oh. Whiplash is fucking fantastic. I love that movie. J.K. Simmons is just...
he's never had a bad role.
He's perfect.
Yeah.
He's so good.
It's like him, Tom Hardy. There's like a handful of actors that just, they don't fuck up.
They really don't. No. Like, and Simmons is in so much as well. It's like, he's a hard ass in that. In Spider-Man, he's just like this over the top. Yeah. Like, but in a different way, like Whiplash, he's over the top, but like harsh like basically a bully and like just a complete asshole. And Spider-Man, he's just like exaggerated.
Yeah, he's just like a hyperbole of a person.
Yeah. And then he has those moments where he's like, I couldn't see it, but he was a menace all along. And he just like changes his tone so quickly. I fucking love it. And then he's like, he was in fucking Legend of Korra as well. Like the really? Avatar spinoff.
Oh, yeah. Shit.
He plays Aang's son. Yeah.
That's a weird role.
Yeah.
Especially knowing J.K. Simmons. You'd be like, no, he'd be a father figure.
Well, because Aang's son is like an adult in the show. Yeah, and he just, he's good at that as well. Like, I know it's voice acting, but like, honestly, voice actors deserve credit. Like, I feel like people like with video games or animated stuff, they think of like, what do you mean the performances were good? It's like voice acting takes fucking work.
Yeah, because it's, you can't rely on like, knowing the camera's gonna read your emotions.
Exactly.
You have to portray all of that in the voice.
Yeah, and so he did fucking great in that. Yeah, no, I've never seen J.K. Simmons in a role that he didn't fucking kill. Yeah, him, yeah, like you said, Tom Hardy. For I think, like, Ryan Gosling, I have not seen Ryan Gosling in a bad role. Yeah, I don't know, there's just some of those actors that's like, they're in something, even if it's not a great movie, They're gonna show up and they're gonna do their part fucking perfectly.
Have you ever seen Nightcrawler?
Mm-hmm.
Yep. That's
It was a long time ago. I don't remember it well, but yeah. Yeah, no, he's just, that was Jake Gyllenhaal,
Jake,
right?
Jake Gyllenhaal, yeah.
Yeah.
Which is another actor who, like, okay, he's not in quite in that group of like people who don't have a bad role, but he's like damn close.
Mm.
He's in a lot of good movies and he always plays really good roles.
Mm.
So, yeah, okay, so Inception, Whiplash, La La Land,
Spider-Verse,
and Blade Runner.
Blade Runner 2049, I'm honestly not a fan of the first one.
Yeah, that's fair.
Which is, I find it kind of funny, it's like, the first Blade Runner is, like, totally off my radar. Like, it's like, I wouldn't even crack, like, top 20 or, like, whatever, you know? It's like, I didn't think it was a bad film, I just don't think it's very special or unique anymore. But yeah, I just find it funny. It's like the opposite of Jessica Jones, where like season one for me was amazing and season two was like very forgettable. Blade Runner is the opposite. It's like, really couldn't care about the first Blade Runner, but 2049.
Was it a direct sequel or did they sort of just...
No,
like,
it was direct.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow, okay.
Yeah. It was, don't get me wrong, it was a significant time jump because the original Blade Runner, I want to say, is like in the 2020s or something like that. So it was like a time jump of like somewhere around 30 years, but it is a direct storyline sequel. So I had to watch the first to watch the second. It's basically the only reason I watched the first, but it's honestly worth it. Like, even though I don't like it, it's worth watching the first just to watch the second.
Yeah. It's funny how, really quickly, it's funny how like the 2020s are looking more, like any movie that portrays 2020s as more dystopian, that seems more realistic than like, you know, Back to the Future, where they're like, oh, what was it, like 2016 or whatever, 2015? They're like on hoverboards.
It's going to be so great. Yeah, it's like, well,
Donald Trump was president.
Yeah, it's amazing. There's literally a scene in the original Blade Runner. Keep in mind, this is 1984, where it's just a giant electronic billboard for Coca-Cola. And it's like, basically fucking prophets. Like, I'm sure it was a thing back then.
Yeah, I was
going to
say,
well,
that would have been a thing in the 80s.
But just for them to be like, this going to like, yeah, like 50, like, because that made in 1984 and takes place in, I don't know, like 2019 or 2020 or whatever. And it's like, just to be like, yeah, 4 years from now, this is still going to be the thing. It's like, yep, nailed that. I think some of the other brands they had billboards for aren't around anymore, but Coca-Cola is just, it's eternal, man.
I mean, to be fair, they were like almost 100 years old at that
Coca-Cola
point.
Was?
What? No, I mean, in the 80s, they were almost 100 years old, or they're already 100 years old.
Really? Wow.
Coca-Cola has been around since like the late 1890s.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
They, okay. I'm pretty sure back then they were like, or at least they had their hand in like medicine. Because they had, like, cocaine in it, and cocaine was, like, used as a medicine at a certain point, but...
People were...
Yeah.
Man,
we've
you
talked about
back
this
in
before,
the day.
But yeah.
Yeah. Fuck.
People using just the most ridiculous shit for medicine.
Fuck. Yeah, it's crazy.
Man, I don't know if I could make a top five movies list. Because, like, I'm sort of so all over the place.
What would be your top five shows, then?
Yeah, top five shows I feel like I could do. I would say... I'm going to lump Grand Tour and Top Gear into sure. one because it's the cast that really
crew.
Makes it.
That
yeah,
crew,
yeah.
yeah.
So I'd say, I'm going to say The Office number one, mm-hmm. probably Grand Tour, Top Gear number two. Mm-hmm. Number three, I feel like I got to say The Boys. The Boys is so mm-hmm. good, even with just two seasons.
Yeah, no, I'll give it to you.
Yeah. I'm at three or four.
Three.
Didn't I have... No, okay, that was number three, though.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, so I'm at number four. Number four. I guess, are we doing just theatrical or, like, just any sort of TV?
No, do whatever. Yeah.
Okay. The only reality show I watch, Survivor.
Okay.
I feel like it's sort of old, but, like, they still sort of do a good job at, like, keeping it fresh. Okay. And then number five, I don't really watch a whole lot of TV, but... SpongeBob. No.
I would give that to you. Yeah, no. SpongeBob's a good show.
Like, eternal in the like ability to meme it.
Mm.
Like, if you look up best Patrick moments now, like, they're still funny now.
Yeah.
No, I feel like I got to do something else. Oh my god, I'm fucking forgetting. No, okay. You know what? Scratch Survivor, Brooklyn Nine-Nine, and On My Block.
Okay, On My Block I haven't seen.
Dude, you gotta watch it.
Yeah?
You gotta watch
it.
Is that
a Netflix show?
Yeah.
Okay.
And they have, I think, three seasons.
Okay.
So, I would get on watching that. I watched that just before quarantine, sort mm-hmm. of like March. I guess it was like February, March, right before season three came out. But holy, dude, it's so good.
Yeah?
It's so good.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, so that'd be my top five.
Okay. Cool. Yeah, I'll check it out.
All right. Well, I think we're going to end it there. It was a long one.
We've only gone for an hour and a half. You want to go for another hour and a half more?
Make it a Joe Rogan fucking episode where it's just 4 hours long.
God, is that how long they are?
No, I mean, they're usually like 2 to 3 hours, but still, like, he goes for a while.
Jeez.
But yeah, anyways, if you guys made it all the way through, thank you. And what the fuck?
I wouldn't make it all the way through.
Yeah, seriously. I mean, in parts. If you did it in parts, thanks. Again, next week we'll be doing remote. Matt will be back. And I think we'll probably have less issue with us being sort of like one in, one out. Because honestly, we could do it at any... I think we'll have a little bit more like...
Any day, any time.
Ability, yeah, to do it any day. Yeah. Again, follow us on Instagram. We post updates there, clips, if we get them.
Oh, yeah, that'll be, yeah, we'll figure that out.
Yeah, we'll have to figure that out eventually, because that'll be, Steven's getting a new camera, so the
spoilers.
Clips will,
spoilers.
Yeah, spoiler alert.
Now there's expectations.
There's, well,
oh, fuck.
Maybe. Maybe there's expectations. Anyways, thank you guys for listening, and hopefully you guys come back for the next one.
See ya.
See ya.